Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Cale Copeland and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thank you for being here. This is episode number 19 and with me today is parenting expert Allison Rees. This is the finale of this series that she and I have done and today we're going to uncover and learn more about responsibility and what that means for our children. So I'm excited to learn more. I know you are. Some of you might also be wondering, you know, what's a health podcast talking about parenting for? You know, the reason for that is that relationships, like parenting is essentially relationships, and it falls under the umbrella of mental health, and mental health is a really big topic nowadays, and I think it's something we need to learn more about so that not only we can have a better life, but so we can make life better for those around us. So it's great stuff. Now, before Allison joins us, if there's any questions and you need assistance, you can reach us here at Victoria Family Chiropractic anytime. Number's 250-592-5553, or you can visit us online at www.vfchiro.com. So here's a bit of what Allison, so she's been educating and parenting with her seminars, which are called Life Seminars. She's co-authored 2 books, regular magazine and newspaper articles, radio programs, and more for over 30 years. My wife and I both recently attended one of her 8-week courses. It was awesome. We loved it. If you want more information about Allison, please visit her website, which is great, at www.lifeseminars.com. Allison, thanks again for being
Hello.
Here. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Cale. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we're so lucky to have you. So today, this is a big topic. I know it is. So why don't we start off? Why don't you explain a little bit about what, you know, what does responsibility mean for our kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different meanings to responsibility. I mean, if you think about what it means to you, you know, there's a deep part of all of us that wants to take care of business and it feels good and, you know, to be accountable and to be responsible means that we can rest and feel comfort in our life because we know we're taking care of business. Okay. And I think that we can role model that spirit of taking responsibility. And I think a really great word is accountability. I think that we can role model kind of a value of accountability in our families. Because if you think about it, when people have difficulty in their adult life, it's often because they aren't able to hear corrective feedback. They can have self-esteem issues where, you know, they're just not able to look at something that they're doing and hear that there could be a better way to do it. And a lot of those kind of character challenges are actually formed in childhood. So I think the reason I teach parenting is there is so much influence we have over our children's future with our own behavior, and much of it can be blind to us. You know, we don't always see it.
Yeah. Like, you mean sort of, in other words, you're parenting when you don't think you're parenting type thing? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, or parenting styles that we think are, you know, working, which could actually be backfiring. So, I mean, there's a few distinct learning styles that, yeah, that we really need to look at. And one of them is doing too much for our kids or kind of overprotecting them.
Right.
And, you know, not giving them a chance to start to take responsibility and to actually experience not taking responsibility. So that if it's something that's not devastating, you know, if it's an issue that belongs to the kid, not interfering and not constantly anticipating their needs, giving them space to kind of look after themselves where they can. Overprotectiveness stops that from happening. It protects children from healthy frustrations and healthy negative experiences, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like we need to let our kids fall on the grass. You know, because it's not going to devastate them. Of course, we protect them from falling off a cliff. But if we overprotect kids, we're doing way too much parenting, and that doesn't serve kids well at all.
Okay.
Now, there's also, you know, where we expect too much of our kids. And you know, kids can base their self-esteem on being obedient, and they appear very, very mature, but in fact, they actually need to play more and be less responsible. So it's interesting because as parents, we're always trying to watch that balance. Is it too much responsibility? Is it enough? How do I know? And so as we go through the show, I do want to talk about looking at different levels. We've got kind of a language of levels around kids' readiness to take responsibility.
Yeah, that's exciting, because that was actually the exact question I wanted to ask you. It was just, you know, obviously some parents seem to give their kids, I don't know if freedom is the right word, or, you know, I guess there's a difference between freedom and responsibility, and but certainly some parents give their kids a lot more and some parents don't. And you know, there's obviously, it's obviously positive sometimes. But you know, let's go back to accountability real quick. Cause you brought that up really quickly when we talked about responsibility, and do you want to just expand a bit on that? Like how those two relate?
I think accountability is taking ownership. You know, being able to acknowledge that if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to be accountable and good to my word, and I'm going to do it unless there's something really huge that's going on.
Okay.
So we can role model that with our kids. But here's another thing, and this is just a random thought I had not too long ago. Kids need to be accountable to the decisions that they make, to what they agree to do. So the first part of handing responsibility over to kids is to engage them in conversations around what they do, giving them choices, asking them what this could look like, and actually have them script their responsibility and script how it's going to look, so that they have to be accountable to their word versus just doing as they are told. And I really believe that that's where the seeds of accountability are planted.
Oh, wow.
So
it's not just like saying, do this. It's more of a, hey, right, like, let's sit down and let's figure out what this looks like, and involve them in the process so that they are taking ownership of it.
Exactly. And a really practical example of that might be, say you have a 12-year-old who, you know, it's time that they start doing their own laundry, and you have a discussion about it, and you teach them how to do it, and they talk about what it's going to look like for them. But you also get to say, okay, well, this is your part of the responsibility, and my part is going to be to stop nagging you about your laundry, and I'm not going to interfere and do it for you because I am willing to hand this over. It could be a bit rough. I'll do my part. You do yours, and we'll check in and see how it's working.
Okay.
And then, you know, and then they're either responsible to their word, and if they're not, then, you know, they get to experience the natural consequences of not being accountable. And if it comes to something that directly involves them and doesn't really involve other people, then you just let them experience that without interfering and nagging and taking over. So there's a real letting go.
Like, you mean an example of this might be if we're going to talk about laundry, you know, there's been a discussion, they've agreed to do it, they've been instructed how to do it, and then it turns out they don't do it, and the day comes, they don't have clean clothes. Is that kind of what you mean by the consequences of?
I totally do. And here's how it sounds. At first, when a kid is given responsibility, they're often so used to being looked after that when the laundry's not done, they look at their parent and complain, I don't have any clean clothes.
Right, of course.
But if a parent can be consistent and just give empathy but not take over or rescue, then there comes a point in time where you hear a change in their dialogue, which is, oh, darn, I didn't do my laundry. But
right,
they're not blaming you.
And
so you see when, yes.
So that's that accountability piece.
It is. And that plants the seed so that they aren't looking at you, blaming you for everything. And when people do that as adults, it's not an attractive feature in their character.
No, not at all.
You know, exactly. Now, the other thing that I want to say before we get into the levels is, if it's a responsibility that involves everybody in the family, I think the old adage, you know, grandmother's rule, when then. still really applies. When you've emptied the dishwasher, then I'll drive you to Kate's place. You know, yeah. When all of us finish our Saturday morning cleanup, then all of us can have the freedom to do what we need to do.
Yeah.
And often, you know, actually, we want to set them up for success. And responsibility with chores, for example, often goes better when the family's doing it together.
Yeah.
You know, and they have those choices, et cetera. Yeah, but anyway, does that explain what I mean by accountability?
It does, for sure. I think that's actually really good. But I think the part that we touched on that I found so powerful was that it was kind of the lead up to it, right? It's really easy for a parent to sort of say, you know, bark an order, like, I want you to do this. And yet the reality is there was no ownership by the child, and there was no real clear cut situation for them to sort of grab hold of it and understand it. So then, yeah, there is no accountability, and then that leads to frustration. So really, the importance of setting the table, I guess you could say it, so that that situation mm-hmm. so they can be successful. And then if they aren't successful, they can take ownership of it and learn what comes from that.
Well, you know, there's two points there. I mean, one is nobody wants to be on the receiving end of constant demands, because we're just going to end up feeling resentful.
Right.
You know, kids are no different than adults. And so I think that's a really important piece. And and that we're all in this together, you know.
Yeah. That's really big, because I think there is a parenting you know, a lot of people may sort of experience parenting as being like a one-way street, but really you're talking about it more as a relationship and it being a situation where people come to agreements, as opposed to it being a one-way, you do this and or else. Is that, would you say that's right?
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's where you get a lot of resistance.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and the other thing is, if you look at decision-making is a muscle. You know, using that part of the brain is exercising a muscle. And if kids are allowed to make decisions that concern them and actually follow through and take action and experience the whole thing without parents interfering, that leads to healthy development. And the truth is, anything that interferes with a child's development this way could be seen as an unloving behavior if we're interfering with that.
Right. Yeah.
It's
amazing. It just, even the lead up really is the healthy part. Just that cooperation and teamwork is really parenting by example, I guess, that is going to help them so much in life. So that's great.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, here, I know you would, why don't we get into, because it sounds like you wanted to get into more kind of examples, but I guess I had a couple things here. Like, I know there's times when a parent wants to give more responsibility and the child may be resistant to that. And I know there's examples that go the other way where you've got a kid that wants more responsibility, but the parent doesn't want to give it. You know, how do we deal with that?
I think it goes right back down to what we just talked about, being able to talk about needs and values, you know, and I really do think it boils down to having conversations.
Yeah.
And if we've had a relationship where we can have those conversations, talking about needs and values, then I really think that there will be less resistance from kids.
Yeah.
Although we do have to remember that there are some limitations that kids have. You know, they don't have, they're not able to sort and organize a messy room like we are. I mean, actually, that part of the brain doesn't really develop until they're in their early 20s, you know.
And okay.
It's not normal for a kid to think, oh, I should just empty the dishwasher. But, you know, when we come up with some basic requirements, and we can be consistent, kids will eventually say, I may as well empty the dishwasher because I'm going to be asked to do it anyway. you know, and so if a child is, here's the thing. When I was parenting my kids, I would feel my boundaries. And I remember a time where I would get grumpy or irritated if I was doing too much. For example, cleaning up my daughter's bedroom, there came a point in time where it was like, why am I doing this?
Right.
I'm just getting upset when it's messy. And we have to pay attention to our feelings around responsibility, because my feeling of frustration was trying to tell me something. And that is, wait a minute, I'm doing too much. I need to hand this over to my daughter.
Yeah.
And let her, you know, supportively give it to her. And so it is our feelings that guide us. And sometimes it's our kids' feelings where they're saying, I need more freedom. I want to walk to school with my friends, or, you know, I want to take a babysitting course and you're telling me I can't, or whatever it is. Our feelings create boundaries for us.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know,
100% it does. I mean, I think that's so important, not only listening to yourself, but then listening to the other person, and you know, obviously in the situation of a child, and then, you know, the parents, I guess, hold the trump card. And this is where I wanted to get into in a moment, was just kind of like, so obviously we need to listen to ourselves and to others and, you know, have some discussions and make some decisions. But there's also like the parents need to hold that final straw of what's appropriate, what's acceptable. And so I guess, I mean, what are some examples that we can relate to of, because what you just said, I think almost any parent can relate to feeling, getting some feelings that are being conjured up, like, you know, there's clutter or things aren't being cleaned up, or you're doing more than you should be. People can relate to that. But what about, what's sort of some different responsibilities that we could expect at different ages for kids?
Okay, I just want to go back a little bit and say that when we can establish a need for fairness and cooperation and, you know, start handing responsibility over, it is up to us as parents to be consistent with that boundary. Many people give in or decide to just do it because it's easier or faster, and then they end up feeling resentful. And so it's really important for parents to be able to, you know, once they've established a boundary, to maintain that boundary and not to expect kids to just, you know, typically obey. So that's one part of the scene there,
you know,
is the parent's boundaries need to be strong and fair. And when it comes to kids taking responsibility and figuring out the ages, I mean, I don't go a lot by ages.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that when we have preschoolers, for example, they're helping us with cleanup time. We sing songs about cleanup. We do 5-minute tidy, you know, and we try to keep it positive and avoid getting into power struggles, because a lot of, you know, preschoolers are too young to be expected to be consistent. But we can be consistent with, I'd like you to help put away your toys. When we've put away your toys, then we can watch the show or the video, you know, and you can do that kind of when then.
There's the whole when then,
But as kids get into, you know, the school years, you can look at responsibilities and household chores, neutral chores. And this is where you can list all the things that we do as a family. And, you know, honestly, just get kids to pick a couple of things and make sure that they still have lots of downtime and playtime. But that maybe once a week, the family gets together and they all do their thing. And maybe every day or two, we all do a 5-minute tidy or, you know. And I think that that kind of consistency is important. As a matter of fact, there's been studies that have shown how important this is that kids are involved. Because if we have an expectation that there will be contribution and we're clear about that, they're not going to find us unreasonable if we're saying, here's a list of chores, pick two, and, you know, we'll do that for a month or whatever.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the levels, and I think this might be a good time to talk about the levels.
Sure.
The reason we came up with this, and we're not the only people who talk about levels, but we just thought, well, it's good for parents to have some sort of structure to refer to when they think about the chores that their kids are doing. So a level zero is when a child is just simply too young to take on a responsibility. It's a time where you can role model taking responsibility. You know, and honestly, do you grumble about cleaning the house? I mean, I remember one day grabbing the vacuum cleaner, and my demeanor immediately changed because I was the one doing all the work, and I became just so grumpy. And I'm sure my kids looked at me and thought, wow, if that's what vacuuming does, I ain't touching that machine. You know? A level zero is simply when they're too young to take the responsibility. So a 6-year-old would be too young to, say, take a babysitting course.
Right,
you know, a 4-year-old is too young to consistently set the table or consistently do anything, or, you know, and so this can apply throughout childhood, just to acknowledge they're a level zero, but I can still include them.
Yeah.
And you notice that young kids want to be included. And when we shoo them away, it's such a shame because that is the beginning of them wanting to take responsibility, wanting to help mom or dad fix the car or,
yes,
you know, bake that cake, right? That's a level zero. And it's really, really important.
Huh.
And then when it seems that a child may be old enough to take on a task, well, a level one is a time of teaching. Now, I used this language with my kids. They were my guinea pigs. And, you know, I would say we all go through a level one of learning something new. And what this means is I will give you instructions. I'm going to teach you or find someone else to teach you. And so a level one is to identify the task that you want them to take on and spend a period of time teaching them, whether it's doing dishes, whether it's babysitting. I mean, kids are a level one at 16 when they start driving and get their L. I mean, it's kind of built into society.
Yeah.
What I like about level one is it lets kids know, hey, there's a time for all of us to learn something new. As a matter of fact, I was a level one and my son was teaching me how to use my computer and download pictures years ago, you know.
Isn't that neat, eh?
And I would say, yeah, and I'd say, Jared, I'm a level one. I need help. And, you know, I remember one day asking him for help again. He said, Mom, I've already taught you. And I said, I'm still a level one. I haven't got it yet, you know.
That's funny.
Well, and I remember the frustration, you know, with my kids when I didn't take the time to teach them. Painting the hallway with Jared when he was, you know, 13, he was helping. And he kept asking me all these questions. And I said, Jared, I just want to get the paint on the wall. And he got upset. He said, I'm a level one. I've never painted before. I need more information. So there's something really great about level one.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, you realize your child knows how to do the task. So you don't need to keep teaching. And you've got to be careful that you're not a perfectionist. And that's another parenting style.
Yeah.
You know, if you are too perfectionistic, the bar is going to be too high. So you can really check with yourself at a level one, you know?
Yeah.
Never, ever take over a child's task. Or if they've done something you don't think it's quite good enough, if you're a perfectionist, be careful with that.
I've got to watch out for that big time.
Yeah. I think many of us do, because it can be discouraging if the bar is held too high.
For sure.
So then a level two is when a child's been taught that it's time to give supportive feedback. We can still supervise and guide without taking over. They may still need a reminder, not nagging, but a reminder. So I think a really concrete example of level two is computer use. You know, if we've taught our kids and supervised, say we've taught them about a certain task on the computer and, you know, what to watch for or whatever that might be. When a kid is a level two with computer use, I think it's important to be able to say, you're a level two. I'm going to be checking in with your work. You don't have unfettered freedom yet. You will get it at some point. You know, but you're kind of watching over them.
Yeah.
And I think that kids often stay stuck at a level two with household chores, especially through the teen years, because it's not natural for them to be jumping to attention. To, you know, they grumble. They're not as concerned about the house as the parents are. We have
to
ignore the verbal slack. We have to ignore the negative attitudes. Our job is just to consistently be fair and reasonable and be accountable ourselves to say, oh, this is part of the deal.
That's nice to hear that, too, that that's normal, right? That you're not feeling like your kid is real. But just that that's normal, that they're going to maybe not be pumped about doing chores. So, yeah.
They're definitely not. It would be weird if they were.
Yeah.
The kids who are pumped about chores are the kids who end up in therapy for a long time, you know? So,
yeah, but kids are good.
Yeah, they're fine. It's just not natural for kids to be that enthusiastic about it, but just ignore it and be fair.
Right.
So, you know, they may be stuck at a level two. You may need to say, well, when you, you know, vacuumed and done the dusting, then the day is yours, but you can stand by that. Likewise, you're doing the same thing. There's a term that I use, and I may have referred to it on another podcast with you, but the idea of what we do. And so it's an acronym, and I'm just going to go through it quickly. What is the request? So please take out the garbage. The kid says, why should I? And so that was the what. We is your value. So you can say, well, I think it's important that we do what we say we're going to do and that we all contribute. And the kid might still say, that's really stupid.
Right.
Do is to get to the golden rule. Well, I think it's important to you that I do what I say I'm going to do and that I contribute to the household. It's just what we do.
Right.
And I like that acronym because it just brings in the fact that this is reasonable, and it also brings in a value.
Mm-hmm. It sort of sets the tone, kind of, doesn't it?
It does, and it's pretty hard to argue with that. Now, you know, if our kids, again, are feeling rebellious and defiant, what's going on for them? Are they feel that we're being too demanding? Are they not being given enough choices? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you can take time to check in with kids, but remember, kids also have mistaken ideas about the world and can see us as being unfair when we're being extremely reasonable. So, you know, you can stick to your boundaries.
Well, I just wanted to get back to that because that was actually something I wanted to touch on real quick. And we're getting close to being out of time, but you mentioned that earlier that, you know, so say you've sat down, you've had a discussion with your child, you've taught them, you've gone through all the stages, and then there's that importance of kind of following up. And you touched on that briefly, but I guess what you're saying is that don't expect to have one conversation with your child and then for them to know how to do it and do it consistently. There's an importance there for the parent to, would you say, to sort of stick with things?
Stick with things. Actually, I'm glad you stopped me there because our language around this is really important. So when you bring up a task, for example, that's not being done, remember to go into talking about values as opposed to criticizing your child.
Okay.
To be able to say, it's so important to me that we have contribution and fairness. You can even bring in your feelings. You know that I at times feel overwhelmed at having to ask you, and I'm wondering how we could do this differently. I'm uncomfortable when I hear myself nagging, but hold up the needs and values.
Yeah, I like the values thing there because that just, you know, it's sort of, again, it sets the tone of the household, right? We, you know, we value X or we value Y. Yeah, I like that. It's simple.
And you can say to a child, help me understand what about this doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
So that, you know, your kid has a chance to voice something if there's something there. And also with level two, I do want to say when you're giving feedback to kids, be very careful that you're not using a lot of evaluative terms. So we probably don't have time to get into that today because we have to cover level three. But when you use corrective feedback or praise, it's important to be very specific with your feedback. For example, if your kid has done the bathroom, don't go in there and gush praise. Oh, this is amazing, you know, because that kind of false praise and gushy praise just doesn't land.
Yeah.
Or what a good boy, you know, good boy or good girl, you've cleaned your room or whatever. If they don't clean the room, are they bad? And then they can become very either rebellious or oversensitive to judgment. So when we talk like that, that itself can create resistance. So instead, go in the bathroom and describe what you see. I notice the bathtub's clean, the sink is clean, the taps are sparkling. There's a little bit on the floor there that still needs to be cleaned up, and then you're done. So you're just describing what you see, and it's very, very specific. So it's not going to become, you know, an evaluative experience for them. It's just,
they don't get as defensive sort of false ego.
Yeah. And you've heard me talk about that with I statements before, so that's not new for you.
Yeah.
Level three is interesting because a level three is when a child is now ready to take on responsibility, especially for things that involve him, like his bedroom, his homework, you know, dressing, laundry, you know, whatever that might be, we have to let go if it's a kid's responsibility. And if we've supported and guided them, we can offer encouragement, we can be supportive, but we have to at some point let go and let natural consequences teach kids.
Right.
Especially with those kid issues. And I just want to say this. We can't apply the what we do rule to a kid issue. So listen to this. Please make your bed is the what. Why should I make my bed? We, your value. Well, I think it's important that we look after our things and our space. That's really stupid. It's my room. The do, golden rule. Well, I think it's important to you that I make my bed. And the kid's going to look at you like you're agreeing with me. Yeah, they could care less. And so what we do really only applies to areas of responsibility that affect everybody.
Yeah.
And I love that sort of check-in.
Yeah.
So the letting go is really important with the right kind of support and teaching.
That is funny. And that's really hard, isn't it? I mean, it's really hard, I think, as a parent to sort of, you know, push your kid out, not push your kid, but let it go, like you said, and then trust that, you know, when there are consequences that they're going to learn from them and that's how they're going to grow. That's
okay.
Hard.
Do we have time to talk about reward?
We don't, but perhaps another one, but I did want to, there was one thing I wanted to ask you that I think you just super briefly touched on, but I heard you mention it in one of the workshops, and it was something along the lines of there was a study you had read years ago about, you know, it was three things or something that determined whether a person was going to be a healthy person in society. And does that ring a bell? I think one of them had to do with, one of them was chores. And what was that again?
It's the Harvard Longitudinal Study, and it's been going on for 80 years. And there were two key factors in helping children develop into responsible human beings.
Right.
The first one was that they contribute with chores, that, you know, that school is not just their job, that they are part of the family. They do not get paid for doing chores, and that they are given unconditional love.
Okay.
Those two ingredients were the biggest markers for healthy development of kids.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Well, listen, you know what, Allison? We're out of time, which is sad, because I know there's more to cover, and perhaps, I don't want to make any promises, but perhaps we can do another episode, because it sounds like there were some things there that we didn't quite get to.
Or people can go on my Life Seminars Facebook page, because I'm always posting articles there on this kind of thing. So,
okay, great.
That too.
Maybe when we get off this, you can send me a link to that and I can put that on the link. So anyway, to everyone listening, hope you learned something. Allison, thanks so much. You know, I always learn so much.
My pleasure.
That was awesome. And obviously the purpose of this is just to help bring greater love and harmony and growth to your home. And to everyone out there, again, thanks. And stay tuned for the next episode of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfcairo.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.